Hey, everybody. Welcome to Adam Blake. That's me. And this is my new PNEU podcast. Today, I'm super excited because I get to sit down with a longtime friend who I met through other people that I've developed more and more of a friendship that I rely on for advice in the bike industry, who has fulfilled a lot of roles in the bike industry. A guy that, if I recall, and I'm pretty sure I do, I quit drinking about 6 years ago. One of the first people to actually reach out to me in some form or fashion, which I've always treasured. Gomez, who's sitting next to us too, one of the other ones. I'm not supposed to tell you he's here, but he is. The current vice president of all quality bicycle products brands, Jason Boucher. One of the people that I admire most in the bike industry, to be honest. Jason, thank you so much for sitting down at this table with me.
It's awesome to see you, buddy.
Yeah, man, it is really awesome to see you. You know, I didn't get out to Frostbike this year. That's usually like our at least, seems like we had two meetups a year, you know, yeah. Saddle Drive and Frostbike, and just with some shop limitations, I couldn't get out there this year. So I really am very thankful that I get this opportunity to sit down and talk to you and just see and give you a big hug and stuff.
You skipped my birthday party too, though.
Time. I will come on one of those at some point. It was Arkansas this year. It would have been a good time because I love the crew you run with too, right? A lot of similar people, yeah. Fullers and Wintles and that kind of crew. So let's start with a little bit of history. And you're going to have to fill in some blanks before I really knew you. History with Q, very tenured. We were talking the other day, 24 years at Quality Bicycle Products in various roles.
Yeah, it's 23 or 24.
23, 24. That's a good long time, right? Just walk us through, you know, what was the trajectory? Did you start in a bike shop and then you get this and this opportunity and this opportunity? Pretty instrumental in establishing the adventure by bike mentality of Salsa, which we had a luxury to sit down with some of those folks. So maybe sit down on some of those too and just explain your roles if you feel like you want to.
There's a lot of them, Adam.
I know, man. I appreciate it. You're wise.
Well, I think the key thing, I started just like you, bike shops. Like, I love bikes. Had to pay for college. I started hanging out at Free Will Bike, working on my own in the public workshop, and I would go there, it was like $5 an hour to clean and work on my own bike. And eventually they're like, hey, kid, you're here a lot. Why don't you just work here? And I went in on the weekends and just helped people fix their bikes in the workshop. And eventually just worked my way up through there and racing bikes around the Midwest and meeting people. But I loved the bike shop scene. I loved the people. And just kept me in it. Then I think the significant thing is I went on a bike tour. I flew to Alaska and I rode to Moab, Utah when I graduated from college. And that just changed my life. I was
sure.
Like, this is what I want to do. And so I came home, told my parents I wasn't going to go into my career. That was awesome. 5.5 years of college and pursue something. And I landed at QBP kind of by accident. And my friend was offered a job and he was moving to China, is the story, to teach English with his wife. And he called me. He's like, you got to call this guy. They offer me a job. I can't take it because I'm going to China. And I called him, and they said, yeah, come on in tomorrow, Jason. Drop your resume off. And I drop it off, and the guy that I was with at the time didn't show up for work that day. I ended up in Steve Flegg's office.
Hey.
You know? Right. And
step up right off the bat, huh?
Yeah, and the owner of QBP and a great mentor for me, but I think our industry.
Oh, yes.
And
very influential.
He's like, I didn't even know we were hiring. And I'm like, I was just dropping my resume off. And he said, oh, here's a test. Take a test, a purchasing test, and talk about this. And they called me back and just said, you know, hey, you can start in the spring. And I just said, I'll never leave my bike shop in the spring.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Talk to you in the fall. And then the guy called back and said, can you start Monday? You know?
All right, playing hardball.
Well, no, I wasn't. I mean, you know what it's
totally
like in a bike
shop. Right? Not, yeah, you're not leaving bailing.
Man,
right.
Blue skies 3 days in a row and your repair schedule's 2 weeks out.
Right.
And I can't do it to my friends.
Right.
And so I just told them no. And they called me back and they said, well, how about Monday? And I said, well, how about in 2 weeks after I go to Moab and ride my bike for 10 days? And they said, that's great. And I started and I haven't looked back.
What was your initial role at Quality Bikes?
Customer service.
Customers, inside sales?
Every single person. Yep, inside customer service. At the time, we were much smaller than now.
Sure.
I think my employee number was 79.
Yeah.
It didn't mean we had 79 employees. It means I was like the 79th hired.
Right.
And we all answered phone calls. If you worked sort of in the front office and did operational work, faxes, if you remember those. Phone calls, customer service, purchasing. And I just sort of worked my way up through our system. Mm-hmm. But I've always been a product guy, so any opportunity I had, I moved towards purchasing and our and product management and our distribution. And I'm at one point I bought most of our mountain product, RockShox, Haze, Marzocchi, MRP, Evo. Like go down the line, I bought most of those products for distribution. And at that time, that means I was doing the catalog work, doing all the database work, pricing, partner recreation for the brands that you represent. So we did everything. So, like, right. I was the window for Dave Weigel at Eagle Bikes for QBP, you know. Right. And so we did a lot, and I just sort of worked my way up through that, doing purchasing. I bought Shimano product with our now president, Rich Tower. I worked for him as an assistant. I bought Campy as an assistant. And then eventually took over large segments of purchasing and just started solving problems that we had and just saying, I'll go figure that out.
Right.
And it's been good to me.
Kind of like all hands on deck at that time.
We all were.
You just did as much as you could to make it succeed.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, the founder of QBP, is an entrepreneur. So,
right.
You know, if you have an idea and it adds value somewhere, don't you do it?
Right.
And sure, I'll let you run with that. I mean, you talked about Salsa and Adventure by Bike at one point. I mean, and he would admit this, and I'm like, Steve, this is what I want to do when I was the brand manager for Salsa Bikes. And he's like, yeah, this adventure thing, you're talking about it a lot. I don't know if it's going to work, but you have passion, so why don't you go do it?
Steve's kind of a visionary in a way.
Oh, we used to joke. We have a joke where it's like, I'll bet you a Coke. Nothing serious.
Right.
That's the purpose. I think in my 24 years, I've gotten two Cokes back from him.
Yeah, right.
Pretty smart, real visionary, but really can just see it. You know, we were joking in between calls here. You're talking about the Bucksaw with the Salsa crew. Mm-hmm. When I worked at Salsa, we brought that into the leadership team meeting, this aluminum prototype fat bike. We just thought we were like, this is amazing. And he looks and he's like, why aren't you doing it in carbon? Literally, like,
yeah,
seriously, ran on my parade, dude.
Right, yeah. I didn't know that was an option.
And literally 3 days later, we had Pete Kosky working on the carbon one.
Yeah.
And he never asked me how much tooling was. He never asked me how much time. He just said, why aren't you doing it, and you need to do this? And right. I was like, well, yes, we do.
I agree, yeah, right.
And 3 days later, Kosky was working on it.
That's awesome.
That's the environment he's created. I mean, we're a little bigger. There's a little more process now.
Sure.
A little more justification of large resources and capital investments. But that's the environment.
Right. And that should be assumed, right?
Yeah.
You know, as you get bigger processes,
yeah.
Add more value and reliability for all involved and things.
Still the same spirit, just takes more time.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I actually, of QBP, I purchased in 2000, I purchased a non-priced QBP physical catalog.
Mm-hmm.
I was just getting in the bike industry as like a duster, tire inflator, sweeper kind of guy that transitioned into assembly and from then on. But I remember buying that and just like reading it over and over. Like, I think I wore that catalog, was not the size it is now, obviously, but it was probably still 300 pages, you know, pages, yeah. And I think I wore the spine of that catalog out from just trying to accumulate this knowledge base and awareness, because, you know, if you don't know, you don't know, right? Why would you, you know? Well, you don't know how many different forks exist and how many different chains exist, you know? You just think, I need a bicycle chain, maybe, if you're on that far outskirts, you know? So that was, like, the most enlightening thing. And even from then, in 2000, I believe it was 2000, there was, like, anecdotal, like, pictures of employees and fun poses or with products they liked. And right from getting that, I was like, you know, I kind of like this quality bicycle products thing. I'm not even really sure what it is. You know, I hadn't been to a Frost Bike or anything like that. But I kind of like this. I'm gonna keep kind of making sure we're ordering and seeing what I can get from them and seeing what knowledge they can pass on to me. And it was a really impactful situation that I remember. You know, still leads the way as far as, like, distribution online catalogs for me as a resource. Q is, I mean, it's not even competition, you know. Like, whenever I have another distributor contact me and be like, what should we do to our online distribution webpage? And I was like, go to QBP.com and do everything they do because it's the best. You know, search filters, all that stuff. And that kind of goes in the back end. But you talked about being involved with salsa. In another podcast, we established my affinity for salsa. Yeah. You really helped the trajectory of that.
I remember.
I do, too. We're going to talk about it pretty in specific. When did you start with salsa? Hard to say because of varied roles.
Yeah.
2007, 6?
Sure.
Something in there? Sure. Let's say that. Hard to say.
It is.
So we were both at the Dirty Kanza gravel race 2010. You tell the story that I was laying in a road. It was a very, very hot day in Kansas.
It was
over 100 degrees.
It was.
Yeah, I don't think that's an exaggeration.
No.
And back then, no support. So you were kind of scrapping for food and fuel.
Yeah,
we're on pretty remedial bikes.
Yeah, I mean, I remember starting. I had probably 6 peanut butter sandwiches in my pack. I carried all my food supplements, and we replenished at gas stations because we shared some.
But you were kind of at the whim of what was available at the gas station too. After, you know, that year, I think there was 200 competitors at it, but enough that. Because it was only the 200 at that point. Enough that if you were towards the not front, it might not be so much in an Alma Township gas station, let's just say, right? It's not the Quick Star right outside here that's got tons and tons of food and this and that. It was kind of rough at times. I was telling the story of salsa. I carried 5 tubes.
Mm-hmm.
I also installed 5 tubes that day, you know, like rough goes those were. So you tell the story that I was catching some cool down in the middle of a gravel road with no shade anywhere. It's desolate
I
out there.
I want to say, well, I think you're riding your single speed Erickson that year.
Single speed Erickson for sure.
And beautiful bike.
Yeah.
I think you had a blue jersey on.
I can't even remember what it was. Maybe an Erickson blue jersey.
You had
maybe
a blue jersey on, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
from my pictures.
Oh yeah,
and I don't know if any of you have ridden gravel roads and gravel races. You know, there are times you feel better than someone, and times you feel worse. And we saw each other a bunch that day. I was on a prototype Ty Fargo.
Yep, bike with no name.
It was the bike with.
I want to talk about that more too.
Okay,
in a bit.
Bike with no name, and I come up. Somewhere probably between mile 115 and 130, and Adam's laying in the middle of the road.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'm like, you okay, dude?
Oh, yeah.
I'm good. Just cooling off. I mean,
baking in the sun.
Baking in the sun, because there's no way that gravel was cool. But you finished. You finished well.
Yeah. I actually ended up finishing third single speed that year. I had some luxuries with some people that you know, I remember specifically the third checkpoint. I was ready to quit. Yeah. It was at maybe 140, and then we got to Alma at 165, something like that. Yeah, well, at previous Cottonwood Falls, maybe, I roll in, and I'm like, man, I am, like, toast. And Jim Cummins is standing there, and he's like, first place single speed. And I was like, damn it. Like, I cannot quit at this point, you know? So I go into the gas station. It's a killing field. I mean, people
are... remember what happened in the gas station?
People are throwing up.
It was the motorcycle driver, the KLR dude, that was out on course.
Yeah.
He destroyed...
Yeah. People are, like, cramping, like, full body cramping, you know, like, standing in the coolers, not buying anything, just sitting there. But, like, it was a killing field. It was really nasty. And anyways... hooked up with the second place single speed rider, and we made a pact to ride together at least to Alma, and then we'd duke it out if we wanted.
Did Scott win that year?
Bigelow, right? Is that the last name?
Scott Bigelow.
Yeah, Scott is the name, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, and we had yo-yoed all day, so we were very aware of each other. Well, I get to Alma, and MG, Matt Gersib, and Aaron Gamble are there, both Lincoln riders. And Gamble's like, hey, you want a popsicle? And I was like, oh, yeah. And I remember just putting the popsicle on my face. Not in my mouth, just like on my face, laying on the concrete, hoping for the best, you know. And Gamble kind of ushered me at least to mile 180 or something. Mm-hmm. I kind of cramped, but he was the first one I saw at the finish line. But based on that, because back then, not as many events, even less people interested in those events at the time. You were really searching out to find the ultra type stuff. I had connected with Gersib, who at the time was a Salsa sponsored rider. You, Tim Eck, Joe Miser, and Matt. Matt and I kind of made it a 6-hour mountain bike race or something where we duked it out for a little while, and it was really good. He starts talking to me about Titanium and this Ty La Cruz that is coming out, which was a pretty forward-thinking model at the time, had reasonable tire clearance, was a very reasonable weight with the implementation of Ty. And I'm like, dang, I would love to get on that. My Erickson was single-speed specific, no cable bosses or anything, and it was just a mountain bike, too, so I wanted drop bar, hand positions, all this stuff. So he contacted you or he
called me.
Yeah. And then we get in contact and I don't remember all the conversations, but I do distinctly remember once we had ironed out the details, you were vehement. This is not sponsorship. This is not a sponsorship deal. This is no way implies that we are sponsoring you. And I'm like, whatever, man. All good, Jason. Like, I'm cool with anything. I just want to ride this bike. But the La Cruz tire really opened up my eyes to a lot of things, you know, that Salsa continued to progress with, the Warbird and Fargo and Cutthroat and these kind of, you know, more tailored gravel offerings. How did you infiltrate that community? You know, I knew Ecky through NUE series stuff with Buffington and Charlie Farrow, one of the coolest people I've ever met in my life. Death Before Dishonor crew out of Duluth.
Yeah,
I met Gersib at that 6-hour race. I'd met Miser somewhere. Maybe I kind of thought maybe Schwamigan 100, the Kyushu year mountain bike race that he put on the first year. And I met you there, but how did you get into that crew, you know?
Let me think about that. I'm going to talk about your La Cruz for a second, because it is actually, the thread. So you bought a production La Cruz the previous year, or even the year before that, Miser won Trans Iowa on a prototype.
Yep.
And wasn't really following the gravel scene. I knew what was happening with, you know, Mark and... You know, I knew what Trans Iowa was, but Miser rode it on a 26-inch wheeled Salsa Mamacita, you know, aluminum carbon mountain bike on flat bars. He took third or fourth or something in his first year doing it. And then the next year he went back and rode the Ty LaCruz and won. I love titanium. I mean, and so we started pursuing it. You know, it's like there's something here. There was a lot of hype. I mean, a lot of hype in our very small scene. Mm-hmm. But I loved endurance. I love endurance events. And we just made bikes that weren't there, you know.
Right.
And kind of at that time, kind of fortunate, we made bikes we also wanted to ride ourselves. And we just made them.
Right.
Well, it wasn't even complicated. It was just
right.
Like,
it's like you're waiting for the next thing. It's like, and then we did it.
Yeah.
End game.
And so we made, at that time, El Mariachi, Fargo, Muckluck, and the LaCruz. And pretty small production runs, and we made them domestically first, and then we sourced them and designed new products with new capabilities elsewhere.
Sure.
And started making some bikes off in Taiwan where we have our own facility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ty, we'll talk. We'll just stick on that trajectory. Yep. So through the grapevine,
yeah,
I kind of start hearing maybe Matt or whoever, this bike with no name that
bike
exists.
With no name. Yep.
You know, I don't really know what it is conceptually, but I hear about it often enough mm-hmm. at races or on people's blogs. You know, such and such was with Jason and they saw the bike with no name or this or that. And can you kind of explain in maybe time frame the bike with no name's mm-hmm. existence? Because MG owns it right now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, or he did at one time. Think he
better
still does?
Because
yeah, right. You could buy it back.
Well, I'm going to go back one previous generation and talk about the original Fargo.
Yes. Game changer. We established with Salsa. Game changer.
Yeah, I took an early prototype and I was down at the Guitar Ted Death Ride Invitational.
Yep.
Actually rode down there with camping gear.
Oh, wow.
To ride the event. And I wanted to ride this bike. We were going to launch it in the fall. And so I'm like, there's no way I can hide this thing. I'm going to ride it for 169 miles at Mark's event. Yeah. I think we only rode 139 because it was hot. Yeah. But I rode down there with all my camping gear, and I put black electrical tape over the name. I'm like, they're going to see it, but I'm not going to give them the name. And so Mark coined the black electrical tape bike. So I started this weird reputation of like these weird name bikes, and so I built this bike with no name, but instead of calling it what it was, which is going to be a new generation Fargo,
right,
we didn't put any etching on it.
Yeah, it's just a blank tie frame, right?
Blank.
No labels, no etching, no anything. Yeah.
And the only reason MG has it is this was actually a bike at the time I wanted to build right away, and so I didn't use QBP or Salsa funds or anything to design it and buy it. I bought it with my own money.
Because
I was training for Dirty Kanza.
Right.
I was going to do Kanza. I wanted the bigger tires, the bigger platform, and I didn't want to wait for a normal development process, so I made it myself with
so
my own cash out of pocket.
Wow.
And that was the bike with no name that I don't want to say became the Fargo. We were working on it. It has some similarities, if you will. But, and so we made this bike. That's why I rode in Dirty Kanza. I rode a number of other events with it. Kind of mad at myself for getting rid of it.
At least you know it's in good hands. Somebody that at least appreciates its identity.
It is. I'm going to take it from his garage someday.
All right, I'll go with you. Suspension fork?
I did. It was a... I did adjust it. I really took it off in El Mariachi because that was the first bike I worked on when I worked at Salsa with that team. And so it's got a special place in my heart. And I took that bike and made the bike with no name. I just wanted a drop bar version. So it is a little bit different geometry and a little bit different than what is now, or at that time, what became the Ty Fargo.
Oh, okay.
So it's more based on an El Mariachi.
Linsky produced that?
He did make that for me,
I knew there was ties to Linsky.
Yep.
They produced some of the Salsa Ty.
Yep, they did early ones.
In your time at Salsa, some of the early ones. You know, I think something that I always, that I want the opportunity in these podcasts to talk about or talk with or expose or whatever, is how the people that I'm talking to, you in specific right now, have affected me in now almost 20 years of the bike industry for me, you know, almost. I started when I was 15, and besides about a three-month stint or four-month stint in a kitchen helping out a buddy, that's really all I've ever done. Yeah. Various roles in and out of wholesaling and, you know, this and that. But one thing that I feel like every time that I needed to make some kind of a decision, somehow you have appeared. I believe, and I could be wrong, maybe I'm fabricating all this, but I believe in when World of Bikes was going to bring in the Muckluck, the original Muckluck, you would have been on the team at that point? Yeah. Yep. And I, for some reason, feel like I reached out to you and was like, you know, how many do we actually do this? What's going on here, you know, because I'd built a couple Pugsleys and really enjoyed them, but I just wasn't so sure of, you know, like dedicating floor space and bringing in all, you know, because if you brought in a fat bike, you had to bring in bottom brackets and cranks and tires and tubes to support that bike, you know, and original Muckluck was 170 space QR. Yeah, so hubs, skewers, all this stuff, right? It was like an investment. It wasn't just a matter of putting a bike on the floor, not if you really wanted to support it. And you, I kind of remember you talking me through, like, not giving away anything, but, like, opening my eyes in a consideration that still exists for me today, which is, you know, basically it boiled down to, like, well, do you think people would enjoy that bike? And I don't know if you remember, and it was over multiple conversations. I don't even remember how we were talking back then, maybe email. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, I enjoy this bike, this platform. I think people would enjoy this platform, you know. And so we went with it, and I think we sold 12 the first year, you know, which blew our minds. We figured we'd sell two.
Huge dealer.
Yeah, we were like the big dealer of the Blue Muckluck, right? And, and that, you know, we took a risk, and luckily I have a luxury of trust with Ryan Baker, the owner of World of Bikes, where if I've done my diligence, he usually leans on me to be like, okay, this is going to be good, you know? And I'd done my diligence. It's like, yeah, you know? And then everyone got on board in the shop. You know, it wasn't just like my idea. But it's come up a few times. I remember the first Frostbike after I quit drinking. So I quit drinking in December. Frostbike is generally in February. Yeah. I personally used to drink a lot at Frostbike and everywhere else. And you and I were in a Civia booth, not, you know, just in that parameter. And we chatted about, like, unlocking possibilities kind of thing, like a theoretical idea of like, man, now you realize what has hindered you kind of thing, or a thing that is at least not let you be up to potential. And it's just crazy to me that while I don't get as many opportunities to sit and chat with you as I would like, almost all of them are very impactful to me. And I want to tell you to your face, too, you know, and in a recording that I'm very appreciative of that. Because while you've never told me do or don't, you know, at all, and I would not expect that from you in many years of us knowing each other at this point, maybe 10 years, you've always said what I needed to hear, right? And I think that's a big deal, not mentor, not this, not that, you know, because we have disconnects, but it's always been really nice to have somebody who who's been with QBP for 24 years, who obviously has an understanding of the industry, you know, and an industry that I'm very passionate about. If you know me and Jason personally, we have pretty different personalities, I would say, a little more reserved, a little more boisterous, it just is, right? But we connect on this level, you know? Yeah. And so while Dirty Kanza and all these gravel events and similar passions went, it's been really fun to grow with people and see how, you know, when I met you, you weren't the VP of quality bicycle products brands. My friend Benton Hunt, who I thought I was going to get to chat with today, but it's just not going to work. We started just shop rats. Mm-hmm. Not exactly together, but pretty soon. And his rise is very inspirational to me. And I always have felt that it was a great luxury to be able to communicate with people like that who have helped formulate my ideals in the bike industry. How have I shaped your interpretation of the bike industry, Jason?
Oh, boy. Now you're putting me on the spot. Well, I mean, first, I haven't thought about it this way, Adam. But now that you bring it up that I was at these pivotal moments in your life, I'm kind of disappointed you didn't call me about your marriage. But, you know, I forgive you. You forgot one, the Gravel City, too, when you moved to Kansas.
Yeah, Gravel City. Huge impact on my life, yeah. Right?
You called me to see if this was real.
Right. Can we make a shop in a town that can't support the shop by itself that only sells gravel bikes? Yeah. What am I doing here?
I got to think about that question. I told this to you on the phone when you called me. For me, the reason one of the many things I love about you, aside from just your positivity, is your honesty.
To a fault at times.
So we talk product. I know you're not going to BS me.
Right.
If you like it, you like it. Yep. You're not going to just be like, oh, I better say nice things because I like salsa. Yeah. Or I like QBP. Or I like this brand or this product or whatever. It's like, that sucks. Here's why.
Right.
And so we've developed that over the years, that brutal honesty. And I think that transpires into other things for you and me.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why I've always loved it. You know, it's like I always want to find the thing to latch onto in people. You know, what's your superpower?
Right.
People like you. Yeah. And you're brutally honest.
Yeah, I know.
At least that's my experience, you know, and so, like, I think I lean on you when I have needed brutal honesty, when we talk about tubeless or we've talked about carbon forks and lengths and features on forks over the years. I know you are always going to tell me, and it's not just because, it's not like just because you're going to tell me just because I want to use it this way or my customer said this or whatever. And so, for me, you've influenced me and product. Really with that integrity of I'm always going to tell you the truth and I can always count on it.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever called you to hear what I wanted to hear necessarily. I always expected to hear what I needed to hear, you know, like and not to deter or detract, but to frame in most cases, right? It's always been appreciated and a luxury that I have.
The funny thing is, though, we've tried to ride together a whole bunch of times. It never works.
Ever. We're going to figure it out one of these days. Years. I wanted to get to Arkansas. I was down at One Night Stand in Stillwater, Bobby Wintle mountain bike race, and I'd already been gone for a few days, and I was going to jet over, and it just didn't work. It was a real bummer.
Or like when I was driving back, I was down way back Adventure Monkey photography thing.
Yeah, Eric Benjamin.
And Eric Benjamin down in Kansas. And I was going to ride back, and I love Barnes. Yep. And there's a joke on the internet of Barnes for Jason. There's a hashtag for it. And you were like, I got this route. I'm like, oh, I'm going to come by. And I'm like, stayed up too late, drove too late, had to get home. And I'm like near Des Moines, and I was like, I can't make it. I can't make it work. I can't do another few hours in the car and get home in time. And I called and disappointed you. But we've never been able to touch base and make that work. So
goals, right? Always goals.
Keeps me going, man.
Keeps me going, yeah. okay. I think your role is unique right now at Q. I don't want to necessarily dig into that, but I do appreciate that you do still call me from time to time when, you know, a big picture kind of thing is, because I do want to provide you not only an answer, but a reason in a lot of cases. Would you like to participate in a lightning round?
Sure.
It is the lightning round. Pow, 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 pow. Those are also lightning bolts or shooting the gun, either one. Okay. Gun hand signals. 4 to 5 questions. Rapid fire. Well, ish, rapid fire-ish. Favorite place to ride? Favorite place or event to ride on dirt or gravel? Or if you have a dirt and a gravel, I'll take both.
Souris River Valley, North Dakota. It's my private place. My father-in-law has a plane hangar out there and a couple hundred acres of land, and I never, ever see another cyclist.
Wow.
Pure escape.
Off-road?
You know me, it's a mix of pavement, gravel, dirt trail, farm trail, bandit trail, maybe some land I shouldn't be on, maybe a river crossing because the river is out or the bridge is out. I love to go get lost in the Souris River Valley in North Dakota.
Great. Event that you've never done that if all things were, you know, you had the opportunity, event that you want to go do. Not necessarily you think you can do right now, you know, but just event that you want to participate in.
I really like the, I'm going to get the name wrong, but the, in Michigan, touching both shores.
Across coast to coast?
Coast to coast.
Yeah.
Yep. I like the concept. I like the idea. I mean, how awesome is it to touch two amazing bodies of water in one day?
Right.
Well, it might be a day and a half for me, but you know.
Yeah, you see, like, and, you know, Mark Stevenson did the Master Series Trans-Iowa, which was west to east. Yep. But the coast there's to coast something is something about, cool about that.
There's a different kind of feeling of start and finish in an event like that that has a such significance on both ends, you know, and the Great Lakes. I mean, I'm a Midwest boy. They're special.
Right.
And I can touch two of them in a day. So that to me is an event someday I'd love to do.
Yeah. Call me. We'll ride together. I got a place we can stay.
Okay.
Didn't touch on it too much, but big film, photography guy, not film so much anymore, but
not anymore.
Big photography guy. I kind of got exposed to you as well. And this is a long question in the lightning round, but I can do what I want. Imagine Nat blog.
Yeah.
I got exposed to with great, you know, cycling photography and other photography barns, that I'd never seen before. Favorite shot that you ever took. Can you do that? Is that too tough?
I mean, I'm scanning my probably 250,000 image database right now.
Right.
Lightning round, you're not getting a short answer here. There's a handful. So, riding in Alaska on the coastline, and there are a couple images up there when the crew was filming the Reveal the Path, where Mike Reamer and I went up and got to ride with them and shoot part of the movie and do some photography. But there are several images in that set of people like Kurt Refsnyder, Matthew Lee, that I, you know, have looked up to as Matt really Lee. Inspirational people. And riding a fat bike that in a place that was unexpected. And, I mean, Alaskans are like, that's a boring ride.
Right.
but for us down here, the idea of riding 100 miles of coastline on a fat bike is unheard of. And so there are a couple images up there, and I've done that trip 3 times now. Something like that. That's really special, but I have a couple that are Minnesota River bottoms. There's the John Gatto wheelie picture under the bridge at sunrise. That's probably my number one of all time.
Nice.
And then it's personal. I mean, it's like the emotional connection to my kids. And whatnot, right. You know,
like pictures of your family aside. Let's say.
Yeah, bike side. Oh man, the other one is Trans-Iowa in the rain. Yeah. I mean, I had some iconic images there, and there's one of Greg Gleason, the only person. This is probably my favorite image that I've ever taken for the moment. It might not be the best for image quality and composition, all that stuff, but the moment I was taught photography is a combination. You get a great picture when there's a light composition in a moment. That's the recipe. The secret sauce is what this guy taught me. And that one hit it. One guy to make the checkpoint, and everyone's telling me I'm crazy. I stood out in the middle of the road in the freaking rain, no umbrella, waiting for that shot, and I followed him out because I'm like, something's going to happen, and he raised his hand. I took one shot, and I got it.
Yeah, it's an iconic shot, in my opinion.
And I gave it to him.
Wild year.
Yeah.
Nowhere in the lightning round. But
on the bike side, that's probably, you know, the wheelie shot under the bridge and that image are probably the ones I've gotten the most comments on.
Sure.
That stand out as really defined moments in my life. So, you know, those two are the quick ones that come to mind for me, Adam.
Yeah, most definitely. Favorite food?
Oh, my God.
If you went to a restaurant that served everything really well, what would you order? Mine changes day to day, but what are you settling on right now?
Well, I've traveled to Asia for 20 years. Beef noodle soup, man. Good, spicy beef noodle soup.
Mm. Makes you feel good in the tummy.
It's the best. Honestly, at home, eggs and bacon.
Classic.
I'm a classic, right? And then you throw kimchi on a piece of toast, put your egg on it. Like, oh, God. John Fleck kimchi, I might add.
Ah, nice.
Those are my two faves.
That's awesome. Okay, I'll let you off the lightning round. You know, Jason, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you dedicating some time to me throughout my existence in the bike industry, specifically today sitting here with us. Yours might be tough. Any social media that you really follow? Let's do an Instagram that you really follow. Do you follow anybody that's just like blowing your mind with stuff? You can say a Q brand if you want.
I don't.
Do you social media that much?
I do, but it feels like work.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I the stuff I really follow is more actually there isn't any I really like right now because they've all gotten so sponsored, so right. Like it's formulaic. So there's nothing I really like, but the Instagram still is it started around photography. Mm-hmm. I'm still there the most. Mm-hmm. And there's still the most inspirational images. So for me, I follow folks that have their own brand of photography or life or lifestyle. I like authentic living, whatever it is, know, and those are the kind of people that I find myself following, you know, folks that like, they're not just telling you to like, live in a tiny house, you know, to sell a tiny house.
Right.
They live in a tiny house.
That's what they believe in.
Yeah, that's what they believe in.
Authenticity, genuineness. Yeah.
And so those are the folks that I tend in my, you know, if you think of social media, it's my own free time.
Right.
It needs to be meaningful.
Yep.
And I don't want to waste my time following people that are not authentic.
Agreed.
And experiences that are fake.
Yeah.
You know, and that's hard to decipher now.
Right. You got to have a pretty keen eye for that sometimes. Yeah. I don't really want your personal social media. Quality Bicycle Products, though, has an Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. What are those tags or those handles for Instagram, Facebook? Quality Bicycle Products?
I got to look them up.
Yeah, we'll do it. I would assume it's Quality Bicycle Products.
I'm going to get scolded for not knowing this stuff off the top of my head.
I thought it was maybe Quality Bikes.
Well, you know the whole thing. People started it before you did.
Yeah, so I know. You just came into it.
You don't have rights for it.
Well, while you're looking that up, one Instagram.
So Quality Bike.
Quality Bike. Yeah. I wanted to clarify that. And that's Instagram, probably Facebook, too. You know, if you're looking for Instagram to follow, I stumbled upon one, an AM Blake 50. You can totally follow him. It's pretty legit. Totally authentic. Brutally honest in some cases. That's my own personal Instagram. I'm Adam Blake on Facebook. I work at World of Bikes in Iowa City, Iowa. That's World of Bikes IC on the Instagram, World of Bikes on the Facebook. And we are at Quality Bicycle Products. Thank you to Quality for hosting us. They've let us have a conference room all day. We're very appreciative. Had some delicious sushi at lunch. It's just been a phenomenal day with phenomenal people. I'm excited I got to cap it off with you, or end with you on a really high note for me. I'm gonna be stoked about this the whole way home. If you want to listen to this or anything else, fat-bike.com, number one resource for fat bike, plus bike, gravel bike, gear, what you need, some Gomez in your life. We all need a little bit of that. Check it out. Listen to the podcast. Give us some comments. Jason, my brother, man, I mean that truly from my heart, my brother. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. We are, yeah, and that picture, Greg, is just money. Check it out. Check out Greg Gleason, Trans Iowa photo. It's yep. Black and white.
I've
seen it more in black and white.
I've only processed it in black and white.
Yeah.
I've only shown it one way.
Yep, and it's a jam way. Thank you, man.
Thanks, brother.
Much appreciated.